This is VOA News via remote. I'm Liz Palka. State media reports the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has arrived in Kabul on his first trip to Afghanistan as Pentagon chief. His visit comes amid swirling questions about how long American troops will remain in the country. State-owned radio and television Afghanistan and popular Tolo television reported Austin's arrival Sunday in Kabul from India. He met with senior Afghan government officials, including President Ashraf Ghani. U.S. President Joe Biden said last week in an ABC News interview that it will be tough for the U.S. to meet a May 1st deadline to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. But he said that if the deadline, which was laid out in an agreement between former President Donald Trump's administration and the Taliban, is extended, it wouldn't be by a lot longer. The Taliban claim they, not the U.S., originated the pending proposal for a three-month reduction in violence. Taliban officials told VOA Saturday this was to create a conducive atmosphere for intra-Afghan peace negotiations. Taliban spokesman Mohammad Naeem said the Taliban has floated a plan under which all related sides will reduce violence. He added that it is not a ceasefire. Several Myanmar police officers who fled to India after defying army orders to shoot opponents of last month's coup are urging Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government to not repatriate them. Instead, they are asking for political asylum on humanitarian grounds. Indian villagers in Mizoram state have given shelter to 34 police personnel and one firefighter. This is VOA News. Republic of Congo is pressing ahead with an election that is expected to extend President Denis Sassou Nguesso's 36 years in power. Observers said polls opened as scheduled Sunday morning, although a watchdog group reported that an internet blackout began at around midnight on election day. Meanwhile, the leading opposition candidate was flown to France for medical treatment after suffering COVID-19 complications. Guy Brice-Parfait-Coleles finished second to Sassou Nguesso in the Central African country's 2016 presidential election. Coleles had been particularly critical of the incumbent leader in recent days, declaring that Republic of Congo had become a police state. Dozens of pro-democracy protesters and police officers were injured Sunday in Thailand. The injuries happened when Thai police used tear gas, rubber bullets, and water cannon to disperse a crowd gathered near the Grand Palace in the capital of Bangkok. Police arrested at least 20 demonstrators for insulting the monarchy and breaching public gathering laws. Thailand's protest movement started last year and is presenting the biggest challenge for the government of Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha, a retired army general who seized power after the 2014 military coup. The pro-democracy protesters demand that the prime minister and his government relinquish power, demand a constitutional amendment, and call on the monarchy to reform. The military monarchy establishment drafted the constitution, for which the protesters say gives the king too much power and keeps Prayut as prime minister after a 2019 election. The Philippine defense chief has demanded more than 200 Chinese vessels to leave a South China Sea reef claimed by Manila. Defense Secretary Delphine Lorenzana said Sunday the vessels were manned by militias. He also said the Chinese flotilla's presence was a provocative action of militarizing the area. A government watchdog overseeing the disputed region said about 220 Chinese vessels were seen moored at Woodsun Reef, which Beijing also claims, on March 7th. It released pictures of the vessels lying side by side in the contested reef, which Manila calls Julian Felipe. China, the Philippines, and four other governments have been locked in a territorial standoff in the busy waterway for decades. More international headlines for you are on voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Liz Palka, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Corruption scandal with the Bolloré French business mogul is that it goes beyond the economic loss for Togo, because we are losing a lot of money by giving our port for this corrupt businessman for 30 years. But beyond that economic aspect, there is a clear attack on our democracy.
Togolese groups demand an independent investigation into a decade-old allegation of public corruption.
Bakamoni in the first place went to them and put his conditions on the table. All they had to do was agree. But imagine, just by the name of the alliance, the UPND are calling the alliance with other opposition political parties as the UP alliance. That means that they are trying to swallow the other political parties.
A Zambian analyst calls for reconciliation between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and opposition figure Chishimba Kambwili.
All of the people is afraid to be arrested, and every people, even journalists who criticize the government, can be arrested like a cyber criminal.
And Madagascar groups call on the government to stop undermining constitutional guarantees of free speech. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Opposition and civil society groups in Togo are demanding an independent investigation into a decade-old allegation of public corruption. They allege that Bolloré, a transport, logistics and energy conglomerate, charged the government a reduced rate for consultancy work in return for being awarded a 30-year contract to manage the main port in the capital, Lomé. They say they will continue to pressure the government for an independent inquiry to ensure the public purse is protected. They are also calling for the prosecution of public officials responsible for what they say is financial malfeasance that robs the country of much-needed resources for development. But analysts say the calls are unlikely to lead to an investigation as demanded by the groups. Government supporters accuse the groups of tarnishing the reputation of public officials who they say are working for the betterment of all Togolese. To learn more about the demand for an independent inquiry, I reach Farida Bemba Namburema, a leading human rights defender in Togo.
This has to do with the 2010 election. Vincent Bolloré, who is a French business magnate, owns a legion of companies, including a communication company which has been influencing elections, the outcome of elections in many African countries, including Togo and Guinea. Investigations have reported that in 2010, he provided these services to influence the outcome of the elections in Togo. And in turn, he was granted the right to have the port of Lomé. As a result, Vincent Bolloré, in order for him to be able to have access to the port, he signed a deal which is very unfavorable to the people of Togo, because now he has control over the port for 30 years. And in return, he provided services to help Fonya Singbe to maintain himself in power and by influencing the election. As a result, the opposition and civil society organization, which have been aware of this case for many years, now that the French government has found Mr. Vincent Bolloré guilty and has fined him actually to pay 12 million euros in damages for corrupt business practices, the Togolese also want answers, and they deserve those answers.
Who do the civil society and opposition groups want to carry out this independent investigation they are calling for?
These civil society organizations and opposition parties that have called on the government to investigate the corruption case happening with Vincent Bolloré are petitioning the Togolese judiciary system, hoping that they may be able to obtain answers from a judiciary probe. But it is very unlikely for this to yield any result. because our country is a dictatorship and the judiciary is in the hands of the executive. And at the end of the day, cases like this don't go anywhere. But it is still good to see some form of demand for accountability in the civil society as well as the opposition.
But Farida, realistically, why will the government investigate itself?
In reality, we all know that it is not realistic to expect any form of action from Togolese government entities, be it the judiciary, the parliamentary, and even less of the executive. However, there still has to be a form of procedure followed by the civil society organizations. And even before they can petition an international court, they have to exhaust all means at the national level. And these are the requirements stated by regional judiciary bodies like the ECOWAS court, for example. So there is no other option for them in terms of engaging legal procedures. However, as an activist myself, I believe that the best way for the civil society organizations and even opposition parties to respond to this corruption scandal is to actually mobilize the grassroots to demand accountability.
But Farida, some people suggest that this corruption scandal you're talking about is old, 2010. It's too old. It's 2021. People have moved on, and that institutions should rather be strengthened and, you know, in Togo now to fight corruption rather than go back to 2010 when this allegation of corruption happened or occurred. What do you say to that assessment?
The response to these people is very simple. Corruption feeds on impunity. The reason why our politicians are not bothered by such acts is because they know that they are almost never held accountable for it. Togo has been ruled by the Nyasimbe family for 54 years. So it is clear for us that 10 years in the face of 54 years is absolutely nothing. It's not too far. In fact, if we have to start demanding accountability for the Nyasimbe regime, it should go as far as 1967 when Eyadema Nyasimbe did a coup and seized power by force and ruled for 38 years. But what I need people to understand in this specific corruption scandal with the Bolloré French business mogul is that it goes beyond the economic loss for Togo, because we are losing a lot of money by giving our port for this corrupt businessman for 30 years. But beyond that economic aspect, there is a clear attack on our democracy.
Farida Bemba Namburema is a leading human rights defender in Togo. She spoke with me from an undisclosed location. In Zambia, a social and economic issues analyst is calling for reconciliation between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and Chishimba Kambwili, leader of the opposition National Democratic Congress, or NDC. Wiseman Tembo says he hopes the two opponents reconcile before the August 12 elections. Kambwili, a member of the governing Patriotic Front, was a cabinet minister until falling out with the president. He has since been sharply critical of the administration after joining the opposition NDC. Tembo's remarks come after Kambwili apologized to the president at a recent press conference, but critics say the apology was state-managed. They accused Kambwili of being a sellout following a disagreement with the leaders of a planned opposition alliance ahead of the elections. Kambwili denies turning his back on anyone. To learn more about his call for reconciliation, I reached Wiseman Tembo in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
What really gave me the courage to call for their reconciliation is the untimely death of the former president, actually, who died of COVID-19 this year. You know, because some years back, the father took Dr. Kambwili and President Galungu at the front of the church of the parish and asked them to reconcile. And he wanted them to reconcile because the founder president of the Patriotic Front, Lekas and Pata, would have loved to see the two of them work together as part of the Patriotic Front, the party that he created. So Father Chilinda saw it in his wisdom before he passed on for the two of them to reconcile. So when he died, his wish was still hanging, it wasn't fulfilled. So I thought the two could honor him in his death by reconciling.
But do you see these two leading gentlemen, the president and his rival, so to speak, Chishimba Kambwili, reconciling anytime soon, perhaps before the elections?
I'm very hopeful. Dr. Kambwili has made the first step by apologizing to the president. And knowing the president being a humble man and a God-fearing president, I believe that he has already accepted the apology. So the two will obviously reconcile before the elections. I see that happening. And in politics, they say they are not permanent enemies. So I think Dr. Kambwili and President Edgar Lungu will reconcile very, very soon before the August elections.
But the two are competing rivals. Some people are suggesting that Chishimba Kambwili has on a number of occasions pretty much accused the government of dictatorial tendencies and going after political enemies and using state resources and state institutions to go after political enemies. You don't see that being a hindrance or an inhibitor in this reconciliation call that you're making?
No, I don't see it like that, because actually the opposite is true. Because once the two reconcile, I think it will be the best. Zambia will win. The winner will be the nation. You see, Dr. Kambwili's apology today said that most of the accusations he was making were unfounded or they were baseless, because he was just getting raw information from certain people who are tipping him to say this is what is happening, and he would go on the public and obviously make those allegations, but they were not founded. Those were just mere allegations. This is why he has apologized. So for me, I'm very, very confident that his apology is a new page. Because according to his word, when he was making a statement to the media, he said he wants to start a new page, or he wants to open a new page with the Republican president. Because, you know, politics, what he was doing, I think, he was just merely politicking. He was just trying to paint the government black. Because I think this is what the opposition are doing in our nation currently. We are just, there's a crusade of just painting the government corrupt by accusing them of imaginary corruption, things that cannot be proved, because corruption is a crime. And you know that for a crime to be proved, it has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. But most of these allegations that we hear about are just, you know, political gimmicks and games. They are unfounded and they are just, you know, imaginary corruption. Things that do not happen.
Weissman, you can understand why some people are accusing Chishimba Kambwili of being a sellout or being paid to come and make such statement, particularly when he joined an opposition alliance that seemed to have fractured because of his disagreement. And some people are saying that they cannot trust him as a genuine competitor in the upcoming elections. What's your take?
I think those that are saying they cannot trust Chishimba Kambwili are talking from an uninformed decision or position. Because, look, he's not the one to blame here. When the opposition alliance crashed, or when he left the opposition alliance, he gave us a reason. The UPND and its president, Isaka Ndayishimiye, were being selfish. Chishimba Kambwili, in the first place, went to them and put his conditions on the table. All they had to do was agree. But imagine, just by the name of the alliance, the UPND are calling the alliance with other opposition political parties as the UPND alliance. That means that they are trying to swallow as a political party.
Weissman Tembo is a social and economic issues analyst. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Madagascar, opposition groups are calling on the government to stop undermining constitutional guarantees of free speech. This after accusations that the authorities have been arresting journalists and opponents of the administration who criticized officials over issues of governance and corruption. The opposition groups also expressed concern that the administration has yet to outline vaccination plans and other measures to contain the spread of the coronavirus. They are calling on the government to show leadership and save lives by implementing universally accepted COVID-19 protocols. But supporters of the administration say the accusations are without merit. They point to official coronavirus figures, which they argue demonstrate the government's effectiveness in stopping the spread of the disease. To learn more about opposition concerns, I reach Fanirisoa Erenaivo, former president of the Union of Magistrates of Madagascar and leader of the Militant Rally for Democracy in Madagascar in the diaspora.
The press freedom is really restricted. Over the past 2 years, speech freedom and opinions freedom have seen the largest decline of any other regime in Madagascar. The government have suspended one opposition channel and two journalists had been jailed in cybercrime. One of them, Rolly Mercier, is the senior and former president of the Press Association. A lot of people refrain to make a public demonstration and can't express that opinion of fear of persecution.
But supporters of the government have denied the allegation that press freedom has been declining over the past 2 years. They cited instances where opposition and civil society groups have expressly criticized the government without any repercussions, so to speak, or without any pushback. They were free to do that, as enshrined in the Constitution.
Effectively, Constitution provides press freedom, but in the fact, it's really the opposite. Inside, the justice is not independent, and it is used as a tool of political revenge. That is the big problem. All of the people is afraid to be arrested, and every pupil, even journalists who criticize the government, can be arrested like a cyber criminal.
So let me ask you about how the authorities are handling the coronavirus pandemic in Madagascar at the moment.
Actually, the Malagasy authority is outright act of really non-assistance. There is very few testing and no plans for vaccination program. The only medical option is CVO, the Artemisia remedy of President Radzwill that got no World Health Organization approval for clinical test. It's nearly impossible to gauge the true extent of the virus, and only a small number of people are officially displayed.
The president is on record of praising a medication that was manufactured in Madagascar. Many people who have taken it say it is very effective, which has helped control the spread of the disease in Madagascar. So why are you saying what you are saying currently?
In fact, this remedy, CVO, is not really effective, is not really efficient, and all the people who are treated in the hospital in Madagascar doesn't use CVO. They use chemical medication like chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, and other antibiotics, but not CVO. Even, I said, the member of the government, the high dignitary of Madagascar, doesn't use CVO when they are infected. Why? The fact is, even in the hospital in Madagascar, the people are not treated with the CVO, but with chemical medication.
Fanirisoa Erenaivo is former president of the Union of Magistrates of Madagascar and leader of the Militant Rally for Democracy in Madagascar in the diaspora. She spoke with me from Paris, France. There have been mixed reactions in Cameroon to 88-year-old President Paul Biya's orders that his party dominated upper and lower houses of parliament re-elect officials who are over 80 years old to top positions. According to the Central African Nations Constitution, Marcel Niat Njifengi, the 87-year-old president of the Senate, the upper house of parliament, will take over and organize elections if Biya dies. For VOA, Moki Edward Kezeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Members of the National Assembly, the lower house of Cameroon's parliament, Wednesday applauded as Kavai Yege Jibril was re-elected speaker. The 81-year-old Kavai says he appreciates President Paul Biya's making his re-election possible.
My profound gratitude.
Jibril says he is highly indebted to Biya for asking his ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, lawmakers to retain him in his position. He says he will always respect Biya. Jibril has been National Assembly Speaker for 30 years. The lone candidate, he garnered 147 votes in the 180-seat body. Many Cameroonians expected he would be replaced by a younger lawmaker. However, Biya summoned the 152 CPDM lawmakers together for an emergency meeting. CPDM Secretary General Jean Kwete said Biya asked them to re-elect Jibril. Emmanuel Banmi, a CPDM lawmaker from the English-speaking Northwest region, says they obeyed instructions from their party hierarchy. He says Jibril has enough experience as National Assembly Speaker.
Kavai Yege Jibril is doing his work. I want to commend his devotedness. We know we have difficulties. We have concerns of security. We need to move ahead. Let the government work hand in hand with the representative of the people to see that the security issues is collectively addressed with the collaboration of the population.
Banmi said he was optimistic Jibril will work in collaboration with the government to find solutions to youth unemployment and the several armed conflicts Cameroon is facing. He said priority will be given to assisting people affected by COVID-19 and stopping the spread of the pandemic. Jibril is Cameroon's third most powerful state political figure after Biya and Marcel Niat Njifengi, president of the Senate, the upper house of parliament. The 87-year-old Njifengi, who has been Senate president since the body was created in 2013, was re-elected Wednesday with 85 votes in the 100-member chamber. The CPDM controls 63 of the 70 elected Senate seats. The other 30 members appointed by Biya are loyal to him. Niat said he was also grateful to Biya for his re-election. 26-year-old Ngenang Cosmas, member of Cameroon's National Youth Council, an independent state body that discusses issues related to the well-being of youths, says octogenarians are keeping young people from leadership positions in Cameroon.
How can we elect people at the head of the legislature who could barely walk? The president of the Senate, Marcel Niat Njifengi, would barely walk to the hall. Same goes for the president of the National Assembly. Where are we heading to? It beats my imagination why the same people have been ruling. It is not good. They should leave the younger generation to show what they are capable of doing. Does it mean that only the old can rule? It is not good at all.
Under Cameroon's constitution, if Biya dies, resigns or is incapacitated, Njifengi would take power, although elections must be organized to elect a new president in 20 to 120 days. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mbuga and music from our African collection. But first, the World Food Programme is warning it may be forced to cut food rations in June for more than a million vulnerable Somalis because it does not have enough money to maintain the operation. For VOA, Lisa Schlein-Hassemore from Geneva.
This would be a heavy blow to vulnerable people in Somalia who are just emerging from similar cuts to their daily food supply. Because of a lack of money, the World Food Programme says it was forced to cut food rations by 50% for 1.3 million Somalis last month. The WFP recently reallocated resources to restore full rations until June. The UN agency responsible for providing food assistance globally warns its beneficiaries once again will face increased hunger if it does not receive the money needed to keep the program going. The United Nations estimates 5.9 million people, half of the country's population, needs humanitarian aid. Currently, the WFP supplies food to 1.3 million of the most vulnerable. Agency spokesman Thompson Feary describes those in need as the poorest of the poor.
These are people who live from meal to meal. And the kind of assistance that we provide them is just enough for them to survive. And when we cut it by half, we are talking of a basic meal. This is not a three-course meal. This is not a five-course meal. This is not a seven-course meal. No, it's just the basics.
Somalia hasn't been able to feed itself because of man-made factors such as ongoing conflict and others, including a desert locust infestation and the economic impacts of COVID-19, drought, and flooding. Feary says funding shortages are putting vital nutrition programs at risk. As a consequence, he says, malnutrition rates are rising, undermining previous gains made in reducing the number of children suffering from it.
Without these programs, you are talking of up to 840,000 children who are expected to suffer from moderate acute malnutrition, 143,000 from severe acute malnutrition, and 51,000 are at risk of dying.
The WFP says it needs $172 million to continue Somalia operations at current levels for the next 6 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya's tea farming industry, the world's third largest after China and India, is facing job losses after a court ruled in January against a labor union's attempt to ban tea leaf harvesting machines. Workers fear the machines will take their jobs, while tea farm owners say mechanization will make the industry more productive. For VOA, Brenda Molina has details from Kericho, Kenya.
A group of women pick tea leaves at a plantation in Kenya's tea belt in the Rift Valley, where harvesting has traditionally been done by hand. This labor-intensive practice is said to ensure the region produces the high-quality tea that is among the country's top foreign exchange earners. Now, though, machines are replacing human labor in the tea plantations. 46-year-old Zipora Onserio lost her job picking tea leaves because of the harvesting machines. She says since the big factories brought in the tea harvesting machines, most of the fields they used to work in have been turned over to the machines and tractors. Now people who pick tea by hand, says Onserio, are jobless. Onserio was one of hundreds of employees who lost their jobs at a tea plantation in Kericho, 270 kilometers west of Nairobi. The Kenya Tea Workers Union representative Jared Momanyi says job losses are likely to increase.
Before the introduction of machines, Bometa alone, we used to have over 50,000 employees. Over 50,000. But as we are talking now, I can tell you the number is around 5,000 to 7,000.
Multinational companies in the tea belt have argued in court that the harvesting machines will help cut production costs by more than half, making their products more competitive in the world market. However, trade unionists say mechanization has a high human cost, with some 10,000 people already laid off even before the court verdict in favor of the tea companies. For a region that depends on the income from tea workers, community leaders such as Jones Mutai says the impact of greater job losses will be dire.
Insecurity itakuwa number one. Uporaji wa mali.
He says insecurity will become a major problem. The unemployed youth will take out their frustrations on the wealthy, says Mutai, and the wealthy will bear the burden of the entire community. Despite the job losses, the Kenya Tea Growers Association's CEO, Apollo Kiarie, says embracing mechanization is the only way to keep the sector alive.
One machine, its cost of production is about 40% less than if you are to use hand machine in an acre of land. So you look at it and you see you're able to balance your cost of production, you're able to remain in the business, you're able to assure business continuity for the remaining workers who you have on your employment.
The association adds that machines will never fully replace the need for human labor in the tea estates. Brenda Mulinya for VOA News, Kericho, Kenya.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In the African Confederation Cup, Raja Casablanca of Morocco beat Nkana of Zambia 2-0 in Lusaka on Wednesday. The loss ended Nkana's 64-match unbeaten home record. This Group D match saw the Moroccans share first place with Egypt's Pyramids in their group, leaving Namungo of Tanzania and Nkana pointless. Pyramids, who lost to Renaissance Bekene of Morocco in 2020 Confederation Cup final, are the only team with a perfect record this season, having won 6 matches. South Africa's Orlando Pirates replaced Enyimba of Nigeria as leaders of Group A, the toughest group of the four groups, with a 2-1 home victory over the Nigerians. In the same group, Al Ahly Benghazi of Libya, though playing in Cairo due to security reasons and losing one player to a red card, managed a 1-0 win over Entente Setif of Algeria. Holders Berkane lost for the first time in their defense of the title, losing 2-0 away to Cotton Sport of Cameroon in Group B. Now Cotton is second in the group, 1 point behind JS Kabayale of Algeria, who drew 2-2 with the NAPSA Stars of Zambia in Lusaka. In Group C, CS Sfaxien of Tunisia drew 1-1 with Jaraf in Senegal, while Etoile du Sahel lost 1-0 to Salitas in Burkina Faso. The remaining 4 match days are scheduled for April, and group winners and runners-up qualify for the quarterfinals. In tennis, South Africa's Lloyd Harris lost the Dubai Tennis Championship final 6-3, 6-2 to Russia's Aslan Karasev on Saturday. The 24-year-old Harris was the first qualifier to make the final at the tournament, having got past Canada's Denis Shapovalov in the Friday semifinal. He had also beaten U.S. Open champion and top seed Dominic Thiem, as well as Japan's Kei Nishikori in previous rounds. And World Athletics has confirmed that up to 10 Russian track and field athletes will be able to compete as neutrals at the Tokyo Olympics this summer. Athletics World Governing Body has reinstated the scheme allowing Russian athletes who meet anti-doping criteria to compete under a neutral flag. The authorized neutral athlete scheme was announced in March of 2020, but was then suspended over further violations. Russia has been banned from competing as a nation in athletics since 2015. Earlier this month, World Athletics approved Russia's 31-page plan for reform. 29 authorized neutral athletes from Russia competed at the 2019 World Athletics Championships in Doha. They won 2 gold, 3 silvers, and 1 bronze medal.
And in boxing, Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury's world heavyweight title fight moved a step closer, with Joshua's promoter, Eddie Hearn, saying a two-fight deal had been signed. The winner of the All British bout will become the undisputed heavyweight world champion. The locations and dates are yet to be confirmed. 31-year-old Joshua holds the WBA, WBO, and IBF belts, while Fury, who is 32, has the WBC title. The last undisputed heavyweight champion was Britain's Lennox Lewis from 1999 to 2000. And that's it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Shadi abana ya mulu bisap Yeah. essa tua forma de me amar. Teu toque me faz arrepiar. Beijar a tua boca me faz sonhar. Só tu, baby. Não tem como tu, baby. Eu quero ser só tua e te levar pra lua.
Uwepo wako we kwenye dunia na kuombea miaka mia uishi nisije pote.
kuteajia na nafurahia najivunia uwepo wako we kwenye dunia na kuombea miaka mia uishi nisijepoteajia
mama
was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Bill Eagle, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a wise cat that cares about tomorrow does not eat a pregnant rat. I'm your host, Peter Clonte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.